We went through some definitions last time. Omniscience, any questions on that? The only reason I have this definition is, again, just in case you're reading and if this keeps on coming up, then it will be like, okay, what is this, you know? Mudra, the 10 directions. The mudras are the hand gestures. You see a lot of times, you know, the Buddha standing like that. It's called the knowledge mudra, or jnana mudra, teaching mudra, right? Then you offer mandala, we go like this, like open the lotus and the four continents, right? We offer that, right? So we understand. Then we use all the Sanskrit words, 10 directions are in all 10 directions. So, you know, just got to know your north, south, east, west, in between, forward, backwards, and up and down, right? Then when we talk about realms, we often hear the words Deva realm. So what is Deva mean? You know, it's just a god realm, okay? One of the six realms, the top realms, top of the six realms. And then you hear the word Arhat, very typically used in the Hinayana. It translates as a foe destroyer, a person who has destroyed the inner enemy. In other words, they've understood the emptiness and they have gotten individual liberation. Not yet enlightened, but they are way out there, right? So the Arhats, they're already, they've gotten the individual enlightenment, nirvana, liberation. Okay? So let's see. So today we're going to talk about little new definitions. So you hear the word Dorje. I'm sure everybody knows what a Dorje is. But for those that don't know, okay, Dorje is a magical weapon made of metal, a very sharp and a hard, unbreakable, a thunderbolt. It's a tantric symbolization or implementation, and it represents the method. You may have heard in the past classes the two wings of the Dharma. One is the method side, one is the wisdom side, the two wings. Well, this represents the compassion or the method side. And then obviously you see sometimes a bell in the right hand, in the left hand, and that represents awareness or wisdom awareness, okay? So just so you know, and there's also a male and a female attached to it. The thunderbolt is usually the male aspect of it, and the bell is the female. Oh, so nice. So this is the Vajra. There's a lot of meaning behind how the four Buddha families are there, what is in the center and all that. Not part of this class, but this is what it is. And it's good to know, because you see Vajra Sattva sitting like this sometimes with this at the heart and the bell in the bottom. And then you know that he's talking about compassion and also the emptiness. And to me, it's very interesting because if you get to learn all the different deities, you often see different symbols and different things in their hands. And it represents something, right? Sometimes you have two Vajras, sometimes a Vajra and a bell and so forth. Good to know what is Vajra. You also hear during our teaching and some part of meditation, the three principal aspects of the path. Okay, if you took the path to liberation or the presenting the path class in DV, you would have known a little bit about the three principal aspects of the path. So as you're doing Lamrim, the pillars of the entire Lamrim is what called having knowledge of renunciation, understanding emptiness, and the third thing is bodhicitta. Okay, those are the three pillars, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about it today. You'll also hear Lama Zopa Rinpoche often talks about shravaka and pratyeka, and these are the type of words that will throw people off. What are you talking about? Right? So I thought I'd just put it out there that in the Hinayana, there are practitioners, you know, who strive for their individual liberation on the basis of listening to a teaching from a teacher, and they just work on their own. Those are called shravakas. And a pratyeka Buddha is a solitaire self-realizer. They are on their own. And they are also a Hinayana practitioner who attain self-liberation, individual liberation. For Mahayana, we talk about bodhisattvas. Correct? Because we are thinking about benefiting others, and our goal is the highest goal of enlightenment. So that's called Pratyeka Buddha and Shravaka. That's something I thought was I see that, and I said, I bet you some people wonder what it is. Okay? So So we're going to do meditation. But before that, I just wanted to let you know that all my definitions come from Lama Yeshe Archive. So I want to give them credit. And I have them on my favorite link. And so whenever I'm thinking about putting some vocabulary or definitions up there, I usually link to it. Okay? So anyways, so let's just let's do our calm abiding meditation. Let's bring our mind to present, and then we'll set the motivation for the class. Okay? So you know the seven-point sitting position. And the main thing is to keep your back straight, just like a sack of coin. Make sure if you're sitting on the floor, either you are full lotus or half lotus, or you're sitting in a chair, just keep your feet flat on the floor. If you need to have a pillow underneath it, that's fine. Your head is just slightly tilted forward. It just releases the neck muscles. It's not so tight. Your shoulders are wide, rounded. Again, letting the air flow in between. The right hand is on top of the left hand, and the thumbs are touching each other. Again, your mouth, your tongue is touching the top palate behind your teeth. Lips are lightly closed. Your eyes are slightly in white, or your lips are lightly closed, and your eyes are slight open, is what I would say. And if you feel uncomfortable, you can close them. Again, it is to keep the light coming in, and it also helps you with the meditation. Okay? So just sit there, and the idea is to do shine or placement meditation on your breath. You breathe 24 hours, and it's neutral. And so what you do is the idea is to keep that as your object of concentration. Focus on your breath as you breathe in and out. Okay? Some people like to focus on their nostrils, little tingling sensation. Others like to watch or feel their abdomen going in and out as you exhale and inhale. So just let's focus on your breath. If you find yourself wondering, or in 2 seconds your mind wants to get into some story, just gently remind it to come back and concentrate on the breath. So let's spend a moment to set up our motivation, starting honestly with ourselves, asking ourselves this question: why am I listening to these sessions? And why am I making this effort? What is it that I have to gain? Even if it is something as simple as less distress in my mind, embracing that and accepting that. And then recognizing that each person listening to these teachings and present here has a simple wish, some longing to be fulfilled, some suffering of the body or mind, of which they would like to be free or excited to learn the Dharma. Then expanding our motivation to include all those present, thinking, by virtue of my making this effort to listen to these teachings, may each of these beings fulfill their longing in their heart and to be free from suffering and to achieve the happiness they seek. Also inviting to this place every single living being from every form of life and recognizing clearly that each one of us has a simple wish for happiness. The simple wish to be free from discomfort or disease of any kind. Imagine that each one of these people, each one of these beings has taken care of you when you were sick. Or when you were dying, when you had a need of some kind. But now it is as if you have amnesia. You don't remember. Then with that awareness that someone is reminding you of the ways all these different beings have helped you, generate a strong wish to repay their kindness the same way. Then by virtue of listening to these teachings, may I be able to repay all kindnesses ever done to me 1,000-fold. And may I remember each one, and may I certainly attain all the qualities of enlightenment that I might quickly be able to do just that. Okay, you can bring your attention to the class. Thank you. I needed that meditation myself today. Just busy mind, and this was wonderful. Now I'll remember the Sarangam prayer. So anyways, just a quick summary, and I'll go through quickly the class one we already summarized last class. So I'm just going to give you a quick summary. Class two, spend a little time on it to just get our mindset, and then we'll get to the today's session. So again, we saw video and we already just finished the 7-point meditation posture. Everybody should be familiar with that. We talked a little bit about the insensitivity to dharma. This was just a prep work for this particular module, right? Some people come because it's a hobby to learn. They just want to know what Buddhism is all about, you know. Others come because they really genuinely want to learn. And there are some of you who have been practicing and find it useful to go through this class again because it re-emphasizes some of those points, right? And more you listen, more you learn. Different teachers have different styles, and it's always good to find and look at it from different angles. So it's a wonderful thing. And we talked about this leather and butter analogy, that if you are just pouring in a lot of, you know, if your mind gets hard, you know, like a leather, and the butter is not able to go in there, the dharma is not penetrating it, you can't have your mind flexible. You want to be flexible. And the whole idea is to get closer with the gap between mind and dharma. This is not a part-time hobby. This is not I do for 10 minutes and then do whatever the heck I want to do. This is really changing, like they would say in Tibetan, eons of practice, of afflictions, habits. And this is slowly and steadily, you know, you're putting the butter into this leather-like mind, making it pliable to say, I want to make it virtuous. I want to practice. I want to be liberated. And that is where this is what it's all about. And that's why we have established the daily practice. Right? And we talked about this is where the rubber meets the road. Why? Because some of you, probably not all of you, have already taken some of these DD classes, and you go through your mind and its potential, and you go through the how to meditate and representing the path and so forth. But now you've got to take some of that knowledge, and the question is, what do I do about it? So this is where we came up. This is the class for it, right? Establishing the daily practice. And then we talk a little bit about advice for the daily practice from Lama Zofa Rinpoche. And let me just move forward with this a little bit. I want you to take a look at Chandrakirti. He was Nagarjuna's student, disciple. Nagarjuna is Nalanda master who wrote fantastic, he was a logician who talked about emptiness. It's his school of thought that we, Lama Tsongkhapa, we follow, Gelugpa tradition follows Madhyamika Prasangika. So don't worry about the name. But Chandrakirti is from that lineage, and he said, any time you have freedom and your state is favorable, think about that for a second. We have the freedom, you're sitting here in the class, you could have gone so many places, could be watching TV, but you chose to come to the class. So anytime you have freedom and your state is favorable, if you do not take their advantage and lose your freedom by falling into lower realms, who will then raise you up again? Something to think about, why we are establishing the daily practice. We are trying to raise ourselves. We are trying to practice so we don't fall into those realms. Okay? Quickly again, this was simply an advice from the daily practice by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. We talked about the preliminary prayers. You know, he gave you a quick, you know, get up in the morning, send the Bodhicitta. You know, you can do, you know, some people like to do even a calm abiding meditation. You want to do some prostrations. If you're at it and you want to do it, 35 confessions of 35 Buddhas is what is recommended. You may or may not want to do Vajrasattva in the morning. And then you do your Guru Yoga and Lambrim prayer. And we are using Shakyamuni Buddha for our Guru Yoga. You may have any one of your deity or even your teacher. So it becomes your Guru Yoga. Okay? But we are using Shakyamuni Buddha. And then we talked about some mantras. Okay, we talked about doing Chandrasekhar's mantra on Mani Padme Hum. Very powerful. And according to Lama Zopa Rinpoche, if you do so many malas, it is so powerful that even if you're in a swimming pool and somebody gets into the swimming pool, even an insect gets blessed. That's the power behind that mantra. And we talked about that, the meaning of the syllables. We talked about medicine Buddha puja, that practice of mantras. Again, it's not only for healing your sickness, but in this degenerate time, think about the pandemic and think about all the stuff that is going on with famine and the temperature and the weather and the tornadoes and the fires and all of those things. Very powerful. And don't only think about yourself, but when you do this malas, dedicate them to everyone. Okay? Good for your mind and good for the rest of you. So those, we talked about that. And in the evening, okay, you read a little bit of Lambrim, and we're going to get into that a little bit today. Then at the end of the day, you want to do Vajrasattva, great purification practice, wonderful practice. And then when you do this Vajrasattva, you can also use what they call the four operant powers. If you remember from your past class in karma, you regret if you've done something, right? You rely on the practice and the teachings. You find remedies or antidotes to whatever that wrong was. If you stole a pen, give it back. Make it good. Okay. And in the end, you have a resolve not to do it again. Those are the four R's. Okay. So Vajrasattva practice and including the 35 confessions to the Buddhas utilize this four operant powers. So then before you even start to prostrate, you go through this practice and you purify yourself. And you have a resolve in your mind to purify yourself, and then you do prostrations. And the benefit from the Buddhas and the benefit from the Vajrasattva is just immense. And then, of course, in the evening, you want to dedicate, and go with a happy mind. See? And then we talked about, before you even get to the meditation session, before you do your Guru Yoga and your practice, right, with the Lambrim practice, we talked about the six preparatory practices. So what are the six preparatory practices and why? Well, preparatory, you are prepping yourself up to go into a meditation session. It's the attitude. It's changing the attitude. Before you go into meditation, you just can't have walking around listening to music and then sit down and think, okay, I'm going to meditate now. Your mind is not going to settle down there. And also great practice, if you remember from the last class, each thing is changing your own mind, cleaning the place. We talked about setting up an altar. And I told you about start simple. Nobody is saying to go out and buy these fancy things. As you want to do it, whatever you can afford, whatever you can do, it can be a very simple altar. We talked about how to set an altar up, having the main deity in the middle. You have your Dharma literature or books on the left-hand side, a stupa of enlightened mind, representing enlightened mind on the right side. And you can have your teachers and have a space to do some offerings like bowls and stuff like that. And it can be a very simple or a tiered stupa, okay? And then obviously we talked about you want to offer, make some offerings. And that's why we talked about the 8 bowls that we offer. We talked about in the offer, there are these words when you go through this ritual practices, even when you go to the center, when you hear some pujas, they will say, they'll say, oh, Guru Buddha, Argam, Padyam, Pushpe, Dupe. The words are, I offer water for you to drink. I offer water for your feet. I'm offering flowers, right? Dupe, offering incense. Okay, again, I'm offering you lights. Think about millions and millions of candle lights and beautiful lights you can offer. Offer up the most maximum so it fills the space. Don't, even if you're offering one candle in front of your altar, visualize it multiplying. I sometimes think about the galaxy and all the beautiful stars and stuff like that, just make it beautiful. You know, if you're offering one flower, make it a garland. Make it a huge, all the flowers. So you can think that way, right? So now, and offer them, and you want to earn all of these things that you offer. Don't be stealing them. You don't force other people. You know, you don't manipulate people. You don't bait them and so forth, right? You get it. You earn it yourself and offer little, but offer well and visualize in your mind this beautiful thing. Now, you're going to sit down on the meditation posture. So we're going to talk about how to do a really good meditation session, okay, today. And then sitting in a meditation posture and generating the mind of refuge and bodhicitta. We talked about that last class. The refuge is basically you are asking to go into the humble protection. You are saying you're going to the three jewels, the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, right? And then you're developing the mind of bodhicitta. Remember, if our goal is to be all clear mind like Buddha's mind, an omniscient mind, an omnipotent mind, having the knowledge of everything, clearest mind with knowledge of everything, and the power to do whatever you want to benefit others. That's the resume for you. You want to become a Buddha? That's the job, right? So you need to develop that in your mind. And that's why we learn so many techniques, how to develop that, start small and grow. So you want to generate the mind of bodhicitta. And then you want to invoke your merit field. In this case, we are invoking Shakyamuni Buddha, and those that have initiations or oral transmissions, you may bring their teachers there and so forth. And of course, you want to index your merit field, right? And then you offer the 7-limb prayer and the mandala, and we'll talk about that a little bit today. And then in the end, you want to make some requests to the teachers, and you want to make sure that they stay there, this teaching stay with you. That's why we make requests. So Carmen, somebody's wanting to come in, so I don't know if you're going to admit them. Okay, so, I didn't finish completely setting up an effective meditation session last time. So we're going to talk about that a little bit and then get into the actual session. What to meditate on. There's so much stuff going on, right? So where do I begin? What do I do? So obviously the 4 major parts of preparation. So now you know the preparation, right? 6 preparatory practices, right? You already got up in the morning. You already have some sort of a bodhicitta developed. And we'll talk about it, what to do next and how to set it up. Then you want to have a nice motivation, which we do every session that we have. We set up a motivation. Then we do an actual meditation, and then you should not forget to dedicate. And then as you get better and better and better, you can add a few things, and we'll talk about some of these things and how you can work around all of these things. So now, we're going to start today's session earnestly. So we're going to talk about the graduated path to enlightenment, how to meditate on wandering, the goal of Buddha Dharma, generating that experience, a multi-pronged approach, and I'll talk about that. And then I have some closing remarks. We actually have a meditation. This is quite a long meditation, comparatively. So I want to remind myself that around 8 o'clock-ish, I need to stop so we can do a good meditation and close the class. And if I don't finish something, I will always catch up. And then we'll review for the next session. Okay, so let's start with the first topic. So the Lam Rim often is translated as the graduated path to enlightenment. And we already know that we talked about the Lam Rim Chen Mo and liberation in palm of your hand. Right? But if you really think about it, of course, Lam Rim Chen Mo is compiled by Lama Tsongkhapa, and liberation in palm of your hand is compiled from the notes by Trijang Rinpoche, and this is the commentary and teachings of Thubongka Rinpoche. So he took some notes from Thubongka Rinpoche and he made it into liberation in palm of your hand. I would say that it is very important to become familiar with these two. I would call them the manuals. Okay? To me, those are the go-to books. You can learn anecdotally some things, but when you want to find details, that's what you want to jump into. Okay? So why the Lam Rim? So think about it. There were 84,000 teachings. Okay? So you can imagine there's all these sutras. We hear Lotus Sutra, Diamond Cutter Sutra, and we learn about Dhammapada. And then you open the Facebook or your internet and there's all this Buddha said, and you hear all kind of teachings. It's very confusing. How do you practice? Where do you go? So, I don't know if my next slide shows that or not. So we'll talk about that in a minute, but I'll let you go further with this. So Lama Atisha, if you go to our lineage teachings from Buddha, so Lama Atisha in 11th century, you know, he was invited to Tibet. And he was told that he's going to cut his life short even by 20 years because of the hardships. He came from a very nice royal family background. And to go to Tibet in that situation, in that time, it may even cut his short, but he still went there. And he found that there was Buddha's teachings out there, but people had lost the plot. And just appropriate, 84,000 teachings, and some people are mixing this with that, and it was lost. So he was the first one to write the lamp for the path to enlightenment. So here's your beginning of the Lam Rim. So it was not that he changed the 84,000 teachings. He gave them a structure. And in the West, we like structure, don't we? We have a kindergarten, first class, second class, and juniors and seniors and matriculation and college and all that. We like structure, right? I like structure. That's why you have to see all these slides. And you want to know what I know, what I can learn, what can I copy so I can have it for future similar structure. So imagine Lama Atisha actually wrote this book and gave structure to all those teachings, you know, and how fortunate we are to be able to have that. Okay? It is taking the teaching, and the whole idea is by knowing Lam Rim, following Lam Rim, you will get to your enlightenment. Okay? So that's what it is. He clarified the confusion, cleared up confusion between sutra and tantra and so forth. And so that's what he did. And so again, it also, we recommend liberation in palm of your hand in Lam Rim Chen Mo. So Lam Rim Chen Mo, of course, comes from the lineage teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa. Lama Tsongkhapa took those teachings and made detail, much more detail of, you know, commentary on the teachings of Buddha, of the Lam Rim. So if you were to take a small little couple of paragraphs, there's actually, when you think about Lama Tsongkhapa, you have a very detailed Lam Rim Chen Mo. Then you have what they call the middling Lam Rim, which is smaller version. And then there is a real small version, right? I think it's called the ornament of spiritual experience. And then you have even the smaller version called foundations of all good quality. And I want to point to that. It is in your prayer book, Golden Prayer Book. If you guys have it, it is on page 93. Okay, and you'll see why that is so important to know and why that foundation of all good qualities is really an amazing place to go to. You'll hear that in many teachings. They'll actually do the entire laundry based on those 14 stanzas. So imagine how the thick books have come down to 14 stanzas, and there is a reason behind it too. Okay, so let's talk about, where do we begin? So what I would suggest to you is, if you were to follow everything Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, you're going to get overwhelmed. You know, and this Lamrim is a huge subject, right? I mean, it's a pretty detailed. If you look at the Lamrim symbol, there's no way you can do that every single day. Life is short. And we have jobs, places to go, things to do. So I would suggest to you, first you do a review meditation. There's two ways to look at it. So, and it will come later, I may repeat myself. But sometimes you just take a look and become familiar with the Lamrim topics. Okay? So open up liberation in palm of your hand, or open up one of the spiral bound, I think that he suggested. I don't know where I put it, but it's a meditation manual here. I think Linda provided the link to this. If you were to just simply open up the contents, you will see your entire path in a content manner, right? You will see the preliminary practice. You see a small scope, perfect human rebirth, impermanence and death, the death process, and it goes into the suffering of lower ends, the refuge, medium scope, the karma, you know, the true suffering, the true cause of suffering. It just goes through all the topics. Okay. Now, another review meditation is, and you have to think about it this way, that when you start to look at the first scope, the Lamrim is broken down into three scopes, okay? The lower scope, the middle scope, and it is based on the individual capacity, so lower capacity, middling capacity, and advanced or higher level capacity. Just like our school, if you were to put a second grader or third grader in eighth grade, it doesn't do any good. Right? You need to have some fundamentals. And if you look at the first scope, it is meant to wake us up. Right? You set some fundamental groundwork first, but then you get into, of course, contemplate on your mind, there's guru devotion, qualities of the teacher, how to do a guru devotion. And once you have a guru devotion, your thoughts and actions towards the guru, it starts with that. But the real first one that's the kicker for us, it's a precious human rebirth. Okay? So now, when you really think about it, and then the second one after that is death and impermanence. So just think about that. You know, we take these words, okay, precious human rebirth, okay? Well, there are, you know, eight freedoms and, you know, 10 endowments and so forth, richnesses and all that. We get this real topic knowledge. But to really have an effective meditation center, I would suggest first you do is just read through the meditation. Just read the entire thing. If you have this book, I will open it up. And first you learn the advantages of doing it. Then you learn the disadvantages of not doing it. And then what you do is just read it. You just understand what are they talking about here. And then it's very nice to meditate this way by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. It tells you what to think. Okay? And then you read through it. And then, let's see if I can look at this. So let's talk about that for a second. Just pick one. And you don't have to pick all of them. You don't have to pick all of these. Just relate to something. Okay? So let's think about one topic. You know? Freedom from being born in the animal realm. Take one, right? We can relate to that, right? If you think about it, yeah, you can certainly think about pets that live in luxury, But if Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, if you were to go in their minds, you would not be sleeping. They have like a drugged up mind. Their mind is not what you think. We interpret a lot of things. But think of the animals in the jungle outside. Look at how they have to live. They can lose their babies. Somebody's always after their eggs or food or babies. Always scared. Somebody's going to eat them. Always, you know, worried. Always hunting for food, looking for food. Basic life. Just think of that mind. And you know what? We are not that far away. You can think of people that way too. There are places where people are in similar state of mind. Right? Think of freedom from being born in a place with no dharma. Relate to something real. For example, we can think of Afghanistan. Okay? I don't mean to generalize, I'm just saying it. However, Iraq, maybe China, whatever comes to my mind. Think if you were there, put yourself there right now for a moment. And these teachings are not there. Dharma teachings are not there. Matter of fact, if you were even found doing some of these things, you may lose your life. So you don't have to go hypothetical. You may actually want to just pick two topics and sit with it. Till you can digest it, feel it. It needs to shake you. Okay? It really, really needs to shake you. And okay, you can think of all the good circumstances you have, that you are born as a human being. Think of the choices we have. We are intelligent. We have a choice. You know, we can even plan. We can look at our own minds and say, no, this is good, this is bad. We can do all this. We can make choices. Okay? We have a generally good functioning body. Okay? We have some faith to be in this class if you are coming to learn that. Okay? We are at least in the wave of when Buddha was appeared, his teachings are still there and available to us. So you can think, but just pick one topic, just in case you were born somewhere else, or you were born in a hell realm, or a ghost realm, or an animal realm. Even, I'll take you even further, even if you were born in the highest realm of Deva, it's not the most ideal state because they are in so much luxury and so much of living of, and they have jealousy going on and all of those things. It's like I was reading the syllabus of this class. It was some example given. It's like going to the best movie that you've ever seen. You're in the middle of a beautiful climax of the movie and your teacher comes and says, I'm ready to teach Dharma. He said, no, not yet. Let me finish my movie. I'll check you out a little later. That is that kind of state of mind. They don't have time. But think about it. All this merit to become a Deva, but they're depleting their bank balance by using so much energy just to preserve their lifestyle that eventually the bank balance runs out. And then they're back into that cyclic circle. As a human being, we are somewhere in a good state of mind. We have our sufferings. We have to age and we get sick and die and so forth. And we go through this mental thing because of karma and causes and conditions. However, we have opportunity to change all that. We have a good balance of both. So precious human rebirth. I would just sit on that for a while. Take a week. Set up your preparatory practices, set your bodhicitta, take refuge. You've already set up your mind. I would get up in the morning, you know, close your mind for about a minute, do a general calm abiding, set up the bodhicitta, go get up if you want, have your coffee if you want, have your tea, right? You may want to do prostrations if you want. Come back. Now you're ready to sit in front of your altar, that's your sanctuary, making sure the light is good, you're not overly caffeinated or gonna fall asleep, just kind of make sure your space is good. Make the offerings. Make the mental offerings. Do your seven limb prayer. Set the refuge and then seven limb prayer. Offer the mandala, right? And then of course make some requests. Look at the merit field. Do your mandala offering and then set the requests. So you can do that. As you step for your meditation, you want to choose a packet. For a week or two or even more, just get familiar with the LAMRIM, just the content, just the topic. You can very easily look at one of the contents in the book and just kind of know. I'll give you another slide that's actually a nice short review of Venerable Thupten Chodron's life. If you just look for the LAMRIM outline, there is a very simple one and one with some details in it, but it's very beautiful. I look at it all the time. It's my go-to. Okay, Venerable Thupten Chodron. Okay, let's just go put down Thupten Chodron. There's a slide from Shavasti. Gobs of three teachings. I take a lot of my talking points or confirm them. After I've read it, understood it, I'll sometimes go there, take a look, say, oh, yeah, right back, I'm thinking about the right way, you know, that kind of stuff. And you should get used to doing that. Whenever you get stuck, don't hesitate to do that. I would only suggest that you look at lineage teachers so you don't get frayed off to some personal commentary of some individual out there. Okay. For 15 minutes. The next thing I would tell you is another topic you want to move to is once you have this, if you address this human rebirth, how important this is and how precious is it, and you will, when you're doing the meditation, you'll find out how rare it is. And then you'll come to conclusion, oh my gosh, so the first scope in the LAMRIM is waking us up, kicking us a little bit. So you better do something while you have this opportunity. It's not going to come again and again. Okay, here's your opportunity to change that. So then the second one is even a bigger kicker, right? You're all aware of this. If you want to ignore a topic in your mind, what we do, ignore death. That's not going to happen to me. But ask those people in 9/11, when they went to work, did they know what was going to happen to them? When you look at these fires taking place in California, when you look at those earthquakes, when you look at that famine, look at the pandemic, young, healthy people went to work, got it, hospitalized, couldn't even say goodbye. Correct? So whatever resonates with you, okay? You want to make it very, very real for you. If it's not shaking you up, you need to go deeper. And you do this for a week, and then what happens? You come back, and just the certain words will trigger that thought, and you want to go even deeper. And when you're getting deeper, and you get that aha moment, you feel that, you want to hold that thought. You want to hold as long as you can. Okay? And then what you'll find, your mind, the strength of your mind starts to weaken from that part. Like, yeah. It starts to go away. Maybe try it one more time. See if you can stay on it for a while. It's great for concentration. At that point, when you're done with it, dedicate. Nice dedication. Thank you. Thank you for keep my mind stable. Let me be free of all these afflictions and move on. But every meditation will walk you through all these points. You know, you go through death is certain. The time of the death is uncertain. Only Dharma helps at the time of the death. But you walk through some of these topics. And I want you to really contemplate, really polish that and say, is this true? It's only going to resonate if you're going to read this just for purpose. Oh, it's in the book. Lapabonga Rinpoche said that. It's in the meditation manual. So it's got some value in it. But nah, not that way. Really think about it. Put yourself in there and think about some experiences you may have had. Some people have near-death experiences or accidents. Think of some examples that you may have seen. If the people's house is gone, people got stray bullet and hit somebody and death. And some people have lost their family members. You lost your child or your mother or your father. So think through that. And then it shakes you, then you feel that feeling, then look at these words. These are simply words, but they need to mean something to you. And the only way it will mean something to you is if you really make it real for yourself. So now think about it. You've thought about precious human rebirth is where advantages and disadvantages and the richnesses and the freedoms, and you've taken the 2 points and you moved on to a couple of more points as they relate to you. You've had those aha moments. You do a 9-point depth meditation, go through those meditation, and you will see that you will relieve yourself. After a while, you can face the situation and you know, you start to feel good about yourself, that you are doing something about it. Okay, so let me the next slide. Okay, so the point of the Buddhism, you know, people say, oh, Buddhism allows me to be calm. If I hear something, I'm not too attached. If something happens, it doesn't rattle me. We feel that way. We think that way sometimes when we talk about Buddhism. If you think about it, according to Buddha, no, you can get rid. You don't have to die. You don't have to age. You don't have to get sick. Doesn't sound real to when you first hear it. What do you mean? If you think about the Four Noble Truths, he found why we suffer. He found what causes that. He found the way to get yourself out, and he shows you the path. And once you are enlightened, once you get to that path, when you get into that, to the liberation, you no longer have to age. You don't have to get sick. You don't have to die. That's the promise. We always talk about suffering, and it seems a pretty gloom and doom sometimes. It's all about bad realms and suffering and the bad karma. But remember, you guys, everybody here today had some very good karma for us to even listen to the Dharma, the teachings. That's powerful enough. Something drew you here. You put some seeds in your mind. I'm not saying it's fantastic in that way, but you had to work for it. You have some seed that motivated you to even come to the class, or something that worked that you are now here and you have to listen to it in some way, or you're hearing it. Okay? That's the point of Buddhism. You can get rid of it. Matter of fact, when Buddha finished his meditation and he was enlightened for 49 days, he didn't know what he was going to do. He thought, how am I going to teach people this, that they don't have to suffer? Obviously, we are suffering because of causes and conditions in our karmic background, but we do have the opportunity to cleanse some of that, or at least be in the path that at some point you're preparing for your next life to be in a position to work even further, whatever it is, or you may be enlightened even now. So when you look at the first scope, that's what it's trying to do, is to set the foundation and kick us in the back and saying, wake up, think about it. Right? Then you get to the middle scope. And then in the middle scope, you start to learn about the different types of suffering and so forth. And I'll cover that in a minute. So let's go to the next point. Then the next thing is, think about, even when you talk about suffering, just pick one. There are like 8 sufferings, but 3 main suffering types, you know, suffering of pain, suffering of happiness, suffering of change, or like the dominant suffering. I forget the name of it. But anyways, just take one of them. Right now, that's not important. Well, how many sufferings, and you know, we are very good at 3 of the delay of that. But the main thing is that this dissatisfied mind. Just look in your mind right now. Look at how dissatisfied we get. Even littlest thing, we can go to a 5-star restaurant and we'll find something. Oh, the salt is not there. Oh, I didn't like the menu. Oh, I don't like it. We'll find something. This is always some dissatisfaction. So think how our mind works. But always remember the goal. Remember the goal, what you're trying to do is clear your mind of those clouds slowly and steadily. And that is why we practice, establish the practice. What is practice? Again, if you never play tennis, you're not going to go out there and play tennis the first day. You hit 2 balls here and there. But that's not tennis. It takes conditioning, practice, right? Understanding, equipment, people, time, same way. When you're changing mind that has been habituated for a long, long, long time, and you're trying to put virtuous thoughts in your mind, You want to change your karma to be positive. You want to change your habits. It's going to take some time, but be happy that you even reached this point. So see the whole path. Okay, when you start to look at this, presenting the path, or when you go to the classes, immediately you'll see qualities of the teacher, you know, how to teach, how to contemplate on the mind, and then guru devotion, and then you get precious human rebirth, you get into death and impermanence, then you get into the realms, and you get into the refuge, and right after refuge, you start learning about karma, and then the suffering, types of suffering, and then you get into why we circle around the samsara, and why we want to generate the mind of renunciation. When you talk about renunciation, we are not talking about cutting your hair and putting a robe on and going away. That would be very wonderful. But the idea is to have an earnest feeling that you don't want to cycle in this circle of six realms again and again. That's the renunciation mind. And then you learn about emptiness. You understand how reality is. And ultimately, the third scope, you get into learning equanimity, bodhicitta, how do we function with six perfections, and see emptiness directly. You can see those paths. And it sees how it builds you. Right? And so just to focus on one or two, death and impermanence and precious human rebirth, then you get familiar, first review everything, then review the meditation, just the notes, sit on it, and pick one or two points that resonate. That's what you want to meditate. And then when you get tired, you can just pick up the book and read a little bit here and there about Lama. See the whole path, okay? And this is exactly also the glance meditation. So what happens is, first when you read the words, there's a lot of words. I want to make sure the time, only have 5 more minutes here. So, you know, when you see a lot of words, they may mean nothing. Right now, you are just generating an experience. You want to feel this experience. You know, make it your own experience. But like when you go to a retreat, or when you go to a puja, or when you read a book, when you've done this glance meditations, and I will give you some examples, it will trigger that emotion that you have generated when you are doing meditation. If somebody's talking about precious human rebirth, or Lama Sopa Rinpoche is saying, oh, let's do a 9-point death meditation, death and impermanence meditation. If you've had that experience with your practice, what will happen? It will trigger that emotion that you have put as a seed in your mind, which moved you before. Just like when you have a good experience, when you listen to your favorite singer, for us who with white and gray hair, if somebody puts 60s rock and roll or some good music, it's really nice, right? You sense it, you immediately get attracted to it. Same way, these feelings will do the same to you. Okay? And then you want to hold those aha experiences with you. Become familiar with the flow and go deeper. Now, it's not, I'm just giving you these things because then you will find that even when you're doing advanced level meditation, you'll find this is all interwoven. When you're talking about suffering and the types of suffering, precious human rebirth, karma, death and impermanence, you will see those things very quickly. Why do I need to develop bodhicitta? What is emptiness? All this is interwoven. So as you progress through your Ramrim practices and readings and the small meditations that give you aha mode, and once this in your system and you've graduated from that to another topic, then you feel it, you graduate to another topic. At some point, somebody has to just mention the word and your hairs off your back will stand up because you know it, you will feel it. All this is talking about is if you were to do everything and you have to go to a job and it's already 7:30, you're going to say, I don't have time for all this. Believe me, preparatory practice, of course, you need to carve out time a little bit. And even if you do a 15 to 20 minute meditation, 15 to 20 minutes, that includes your mental frustrations, preliminary practices, your preparatory practices, and just doing your preparatory practices and sitting in the meditation and picking one topic and just contemplating on that one subtopic, you can very easily develop a very nice meditation session. Now, some people may have time and they want to do a little more, but again, they're suggested When you get tired, that's not when you want to wake up. When you start to feel good, that's when you want to get up. Okay? So you can do it that way. And it sets a different tone for the day. When you have a setup of great, you also want to interweave a calm abiding meditation. Before you do your session of a meditation session on laundering, it's suggested early in the morning or before the session, do a little breathing exercise or breathing meditation just for 2 minutes. Like we just did during the before the session. It calms you down. Keeps your mind focused, concentrated. It's amazing. It's very hard to concentrate sometimes. And when you develop concentration, these topics, you can visualize very quickly and it will stay with you. Okay? Another thing is, there's nothing wrong in saying, okay, I'm tired. I did my 10 minutes and my mind is beginning to now chatter and wander. That's perfectly. The Shakyamuni Buddha is sitting there in your meditation. Tell him I'll be right back. Do a small dedication. Go get your break. Go get your cup of tea, coffee, whatever you want to do. Answer that phone, whatever, and come back. Finish it off. Or continue later. Okay? So it's not that you got to sit down for 2 hours, 3 hours every day. That's not the point. The idea is it needs to be real for you. It needs to be something that needs to work for you. So multi-pronged approach. You look at each topic from different angles. Look at each angle, different angles from different places. Approach it differently. Whatever works with you. Okay? So before we go into meditation, it's 8 o'clock. Any questions?
I don't see anything on YouTube. So for those of you streaming live on YouTube, feel free to leave it in the chat on YouTube. And if you do have a question, simply raise your hand or unmute yourself and Hemet can answer your questions.
This is one small topic I want to speak before we get into meditation. Obviously, we'll use the meditation we did the last first class is Shakyamuni Buddha in Refuge. This takes it further into the feminine prayer. However, at the end, when there's a dissolution, when we say the Buddha now comes to my crown and it dissolves, people who have initiation or oral transmission can do advanced practice and practice emptiness at that point. Those who have not and don't understand it, don't worry. Just it's a good time to contemplate on reality. Who's Buddha? What is that? What is dissolution? What is going in? Great way to practice, who am I? Who meditated? Where is that I? Put some thought to it. It will trigger some thoughts. And when you actually get to the emptiness training, it will make sense how there is no real I. Everything is dependent on causes and conditions. But we hold this me, I, so inherent. It's not that Linda is not there, or Hemant is not here. It's a name given to this. But if you look at every part of the body, everything, you're not going to find that I inherent. It is through karmic connection with this body and the ego getting bigger and bigger. And when I doesn't want something, it gets upset. And that's when you start the attachment and all the anger and all that. So when you go to emptiness classes, you will learn that there is no real inherent I. So when you're sitting down and doing the dissolution, sit quietly and just know this is how everything is quiet. This body, this beautiful mind, and the Buddha. And then get up. You will feel blissful. You will feel very happy about the meditation. It's just a very short way of saying that. Okay? So you can practice a little bit of that, a little bit of concentration. So to prepare, again, we're going to use this from the daily meditation. And everybody should become very familiar that we've been using all along this meditation on Shakyamuni Buddha. Okay? Sometimes when you get one of these books, it doesn't matter if it's Tara, Vajrasattva, Medicine Buddha. It doesn't matter. This is deity. They are all Buddhas. Okay? It's whichever deity is the essence of Buddha. So you take that. And if you read it, even the beginning, it says preliminary motivation, setting up, right? It walks you through it, prostrations, see, purifying the place, blessing the offerings, the power of the two, visualization, everything like the preparatory practices, refuge and meditation, it walks you right through. It's the same things we've been talking about. So again, let's start the meditation. To begin, check to make sure you are comfortable. The seven posture. Shoulders are relaxed. Mouth and jaw are relaxed. And gaze just slightly beyond the nose towards the floor. Then to develop a neutral state of mind, let's set the motivation. And while we're doing that, we'll count the inhalations and exhalations from 1 to 10 silently to ourselves, just keeping attention on the breath. Then briefly setting our motivation for this practice, recognizing that our lives are very special, with incredible opportunity to study spiritual teachings at our leisure, to even have the space and the time and the quiet to do something like meditate, and to live in a culture where there is free exchange of ideas, where we can ask questions of our heart and find answers. And so wanting to take advantage of this opportunity that we have, recognizing that it won't last forever. And then reflecting that to work for our welfare alone is so limited. I'm only one, but my life has potential to benefit many. And what a waste if I were to work only for my own happiness and I could become the source of happiness for countless beings. So with the wish to maximize the potential of our lives and receive the blessings of pure enlightenment within us, we will do this practice of meditation on Shakyamuni Buddha. Let's start with this mantra. In Sanskrit, it is stated as Namo Guru Bhye, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya. There's a tune to it. However, what it means is, to the Guru, I go to refuge. To the Buddha, I go to refuge. To the Dharma, I go to refuge. Into the Sangha, I go for refuge. So visualizing in the space before us on a golden throne supported by snow lions seated on a lotus, a radiant sun and moon disk, is Shakyamuni Buddha. He has blue black hair, red smiling lips, blue eyes. He wears robes of a monk. His body emanates an aura of golden light. He manifests in our lives as various teachers. He has given us the gift of teachings and has established the community, the Sangha. So the first generating the mind of refuge, the mind of entrustment in this perfect energy, in this perfect teacher, in all of these teachings, thinking of what we are afraid of, what we would like to avoid, especially thinking of what we would like to achieve with our lives, knowing that we have this great potential and yet we have not yet managed to actualize it. And knowing so many living beings are in pain and suffering and wanting to do something about it. So turning to Shakyamuni Buddha, the essence of all our teachers and teachings, in completely entrusting ourselves under his care and guidance and his protection. We seek his blessings and we recite the refuge again. Om Namo, Namo Guru Bhye, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya. To the Guru, I go for refuge. To the Buddha, I go for refuge. To the Dharma, I go for refuge. To the Sangha, I go for refuge. So then generating bodhicitta within our mind soon. First, think of just one person in our lives. Someone we know who is struggling, whether in body or in mind. Or maybe it is someone who has already passed away and we are concerned. Maybe somebody had a difficult death. So try to bring that person up in our minds as clearly as possible. Or maybe there's a situation in our mind, in our world right now, that is painful to think about. So much unnecessary suffering, and for what? And allowing into our conscious awareness of all the various ways that beings are struggling right now. Those who are hungry, those who are sick, those who live in countries where there is so much warfare or strife or political oppression. And even in countries that are fairly wealthy, even among people who have every physical need met, there is so much mental torment, so much confusion. Seeing the faces very clearly and feeling the wish inside to do something about it and taking responsibility inside to do something about it. So having this picture in our mind will do the four immeasurable to develop this bodhicitta. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were to abide in equanimity free of hatred and attachment. May they abide in equanimity, and I myself will cause them to abide in equanimity. Please, Guru Deity, grant me blessings to be able to do this. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and the causes of happiness. May they have happiness and its causes, and I myself will cause them to have happiness and causes. That is generating love, equanimity and love. Then how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free of suffering and its causes. May they be free of suffering and their causes. And I myself will cause them to be free of suffering and its causes. Please, Guru Deity, grant me blessing to be able to do this. And how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were never separated from this happiness of higher rebirth and liberation. May they never be separated from this, and I myself will cause them never to be separated from this. Please, Guru Deity, grant me blessings to be able to do this. In particular, I must achieve enlightenment quickly in order to free all the numberless kind mother beings from the unimaginable oceans of samsaric suffering and causes of suffering, and lead them to peerless full enlightenment. And for this purpose, I'm going to do this practice of seven limbs, making requests, and reciting Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra. So now, strongly connecting with Shakyamuni Buddha, seeing Shakyamuni Buddha as a teacher manifesting in the various forms to guide us, and as the Buddha that we are ourselves will become. So developing a firm conviction, commitment and entrustment into this energy now. So first limb is the prostration. So now mentally, identify clearly the quality of the enlightened mind that we ourselves wish to achieve and mentally prostrate with our body, speech, and mind, with the wish to achieve that quality of ourselves. That is the first feeling, frustration. The second limb of offering, thinking to ourselves, what would I give for enlightenment, for perfect wisdom, for perfect compassion, for perfect ability? What is it worth to me? And visualizing, making an offering. Walking up to Shakyamuni Buddha and presenting this offering. And as you present, it multiplies, filling the entire expanse of the space. And Shakyamuni Buddha is extremely pleased and accepts this offering. His mind experiences great bliss. All the offerings that we've made absorb into his heart. Next is what we call confession, and thinking of the actions that we have done, mistakes that we have made, and before Shakyamuni Buddha, openly just confessing them and admitting them as mistakes. Maybe it was a harsh word, an unkind look. It was not giving when we were asked. Generate a regret in the mind for the mistakes that we have made, and a resolve. The next time I'll do better or I'll do differently. Go to the next limb of rejoicing. Then, rejoicing in the goodness of ourselves, in the effort that we are making right now, and that we must have made in the past to have these conditions. Some goodness that we've done to others. Some sincere wish of heart, thinking how wonderful it is. And then expanding that rejoicing to include other around us, holy beings, ordinary beings. Thinking of all the good things that are done in this world, how wonderful it is. Next limb, requesting, and requesting our teacher to stay with us and never to leave our side until we achieve the liberation and enlightenment that we seek. Offering them a golden throne with a double dorji, representing firmness and stability. Then we request for the teachings. And from the depth of our heart, requesting them to give us the blessings, to teach us what we need to know this very day. And imagine that Shakyamuni Buddha receives this request and promises to teach. And of course, with these limbs, we also have a limb for dedication, and dedicating all of these positive energies to enlightenment of ourselves and the others. And then we want to do the mandala offering. This is the final great offering we do with mandala, visualizing the world as we wish that were, with clean air and clean water, everything made of light, luminous, beautiful flowers and fragrances everywhere. Everything beautiful to see, to hear, to smell, to taste, and to touch and think about it. The perfect world that we ourselves wish to quickly bring about. Visualizing that we are holding in our hands and what it reflects the entire universe. In approaching to Shakyamuni Buddha, from our hearts we make this offering. And we say the mandala, our stanza, this ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it May all living beings enjoy this pure land. And then while holding out this offering of a perfect world to the Shakyamuni Buddha, from our heart making the prayers of the great purposes, like I go for refuge to the Guru, the three precious rare sublime jewels, please bless my mental continuum. Please bless me and all sentient beings to cease immediately all wrong conceptions. Please bless me and all sentient beings to actually and immediately give us correct realizations. From the Guru devotion up to the stage of no more learning, please pacify immediately all outer and inner obstacles. And then we finally say, Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Niryatayani, we offer it. It's very helpful to imagine that we are holding the feet of our teacher with a great longing and devotion in our hearts, and we make the following request. Hey Guru, hey teacher, who encompasses all three objects of refuge, taking the form of virtuous friend in whatever way it is to benefit, and granting common and sublime realizations, to you, kind Gurus, I make requests, whose holy body is created by millions of virtuous and goodness, whose holy speech fulfills wishes of all sentient beings, whose holy mind sees every existence exactly, all the holy feet of the principle of all the Shakyas, I make this request. By making offerings and requests in devotion to the highest sublime field and merit, you, who are the sole source of all my happiness and goodness, please grant me blessings and guide me with your pleased, holy mind. Now visualize the Shakyamuni Buddha, in response to our request, comes to the crown of our head. Then as we recite the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra, visualize that the streams of white nectar and light pour forth from Shakyamuni Buddha, his body and mind, purifying us of all negative and mental ways, all suffering, disease and so forth. Tayatha Om Mune Mune Maha Mune Soha. A final purifying shower streams forth from Shakyamuni Buddha's body and mind, completely cleansing us of all obstacles on the path, inner and outer. Our body and mind become calm, clear, like crystal. As we recite the mantra again, you receive the blessings of the Shakyamuni Buddha's body, speech and mind, in all the realizations of the path, in the form of golden nectar and light. Tayatha Om Mune Mune Maha Mune Soha. Shakyamuni then melts into a stream of golden light and descends to our heart, becoming inseparably mixed with our mind. Our mind and body are completely pervaded by the golden light of enlightenment, perfect wisdom, perfect compassion, perfect ability. We are clarified as pure light beings abiding in the world solely for the purpose of benefiting others. This is me. Dedicating all this positive energy that we've generated during this meditation to the quick enlightenment of each and every living being, may we ourselves quickly attain the state of Guru Buddha and become exactly what is needed to benefit all. May we generate the bodhicitta which has not been generated, and may the bodhicitta which has been generated never decline but increase in more and more. Thank you. So just closing remarks. Continue to protect your mind. In the next session, talk about training in the 8 verses. I will cover a little bit about the 35 confession Buddhas, time permitting. We'll talk about how we kind of walk around with this lambrim knowledge and colored glasses so you see the world a certain way, different from what you're used to seeing. Walking meditation, feeding our Dharma practice daily, getting the doses that we need, everyday Dharma, and then how you live in the vows, prayer wheels, and how we rejoice. Remember, it's about happiness. And when difficulties arise, what do? Maybe we'll touch on the yoga of eating and yoga of sleeping also a little bit. Okay. Any questions? I really want to thank you, for attending the class. I know this was a long meditation, so it took us all the way to the time. I hope it was beneficial in some way. Any questions?
Dinesh, I saw that you unmuted. Do you have any questions?
No, I was just getting ready, so thank you.
Okay, yes, thank you. That was a great meditation.
Yes. And I hope that you guys are picking up a few tidbits about waking up, doing a few things, taking a shower and moving on. Oops, something happened here. I don't know what happened, but...
Sorry, Hema. I stopped sharing your screen so that we could...
That's okay. That's fine with me. No problem. Just have to talk. And just doing your preliminaries and preparatory practices, sitting on the session, developing the 8, the 6 preparatory things we talked about. And when you sit in the session, think about a long-term topic that really settles with you. When you feel good about that, move on to the next topic. So now you know the cadence. And once in a while, review the contents of the Lamrim. Get familiar with it, how it's organized, what topics are there, and how it's building you up. And you will be amazed how you pick up all these things and how it's interwoven and will become part of your daily practice and daily life. And in the evening, if you want to continue, do a little purification, dedicate, go to sleep. Thank you again.